The next case is Koss Corporation v. Bose Corporation, 23-1173. Mr. Needleson, again, when you're ready.
One moment, Your Honor. I'm just going to get a new set of binders here. And 5 minutes. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Again, my name is Mark Needleson for Appellant Koss Corporation. This appeal consolidates two final written decisions from the Board of Patent Appeals for the so-called 025 and 934 patents. Bose challenged all claims of the 025 patent and most of the claims of the 934 patent. The Board found in Koss's favor on the so-called signal strength claims and found in Bose's favor on the other challenge claims. I want to focus on the signal strength claims, which is the focus of Bose's cross appeal. The board made some factual findings in its final written decision, which were the basis for finding in Koss's favor. Among those factual findings was that Bose.
Can you just try to, and I'll have your friend help me to clear up. What claims, I know you in the Plastronics, you reasserted claim 4 as representative of the signal strength claims. What other claims are related to that that you're calling the signal strength claims that are at issue here for the 025 and 934?
Yeah, I know we have them in a footnote in our brief. It's several, it's about 20 claims. So, on page 23 of our opening brief, footnote 6 mentions all the so-called signal strength claims of the 025 and 934 patents. Do you need me to read them for the record?
No, that's fine. We can take a look at it.
Claim 4 is the first claim in each patent that recites signal strength claims. So that's like the lowest numbered claim in each. So I want to, one of the board's finding in Koss's favor on the signal strength claims was that Bose had failed to provide a motivation to combine with a rational underpinning. That's a factual finding by the board. It deserves substantial evidence deference. And I want to focus on Bose's reply brief. At the bottom of page 29, they asked this court that say the problem with the majority's decision, however, this is talking about the motivation to combine. The problem with the majority's decision, however, is it failed to properly weigh the pros and cons in two different ways. So Bose is explicitly asking you to weigh the pros and cons of the board's decisions on the motivation to combine. That's not proper under a substantial evidence review. But even if we go into the two reasons why they're asking for you to do it, they are not well placed either. The first one, on the top of page 30, they say that the board totally ignored Bose's first argument for motivation to combine. The first argument Bose made was so-called convenience for a user, and for that they cited Parada paragraphs 20, or 16 and 31 and 20. And the board specifically addressed that argument. It's at footnote 18 of the 934 patent final written decision, and it's at footnote 27 of the 025 final written decision. So they did not ignore Bose's first argument.
Can I ask you, maybe more of a housekeeping question, but I just want to get your take on kind of remedy. And I know, again, you're probably going to think we're a broken record, but I want a little bit to ask you on the mootness point here. If we find that the district court's order on 101 had some preclusive effect and that this case is moot and all of that, do you agree with Bose that we should vacate the board's decision with respect to the signal strength claims, or do you have a different position? I'm not sure that I'm aware of what your position is on what would happen with respect to it.
The hypothetical is if you agree that Judge Tiger, the district court's decision invalidating all these claims has preclusive effect?
Yes. What's your position on what, if anything, should be done with the board's decision with respect to the signal strength claims?
This is the Munsingware issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think you ought to uphold the board's decision. Because we filed the amended complaint, it doesn't have preclusive effect. And
but let's say hypothetically, I think that Judge Cunningham is saying hypothetically, let's say that we thought that it did have preclusive effect. The question is whether we would vacate any portion of the board's decision below under Munsingware, specifically the portion that relates to the signals claims, because the signal strength claims, and the reason why would be is that any mootness that occurred wasn't the fault of Bose.
Respectfully, I don't know the answer to that question. I want to go back to the merits of upholding the signal strength claims, back to the motivation to combine. The second argument Bose made was that it would be improving a known device or taking a known technique to improve a known device. And the board there found that Bose's expert had made an incredible or not credible opinion. That's a factual finding. And if you look at actually what Bose's expert said, he merely just stated the standard. It was a bald conclusion, so the board was right to say there's no factual basis for that. And the third basis for Bose's appeal on this issue is that Bose, at the oral argument at the PTAB, made a new argument about a user moving around. The board said that's a new argument. He didn't raise it before. But even if we're going to consider it, we don't think that's a motivation to combine. So all these are factual considerations that have substantial evidence. I want to focus now, if we could turn to the basis for our appeals, the main appeals. These are the claim construction appeals, starting with the 025 patent. There's a claim that recites a body portion and an elongated portion. It's kind of similar to the 982 patent we talked about. We feel that the board misconstrued claim term body portion, and they pretty much just rearranged the words. You properly construe the term should mean the main or central or principal component of the earphone, because that's the ordinary meaning of body, and it distinguishes it from the elongated portion, which is separate from the body portion. And when you apply that proper construction, Bose's arguments don't show invalidity. They don't show obviousness, because Bose argued that element 46 of Davis, the earbud, the foam earbud, was the body portion, but there's no evidence that it's the main or central or principal component of the earphone. In fact, in the grand scheme of things, it's a very small portion of Davis's earphone. The other claim, set of claims in the 025 patent for the claim construction issue are back to the hanger bar type claims. There's some dependent claims there. And there they say that the hanger bar, or the body connected to the hanger bar where the earphone extends from the body. Extends from was the key claim term the board said. Extends from could mean an indirect connection. I think the ordinary meaning, and the ordinary meaning in light of the Phillips standard in this case, is that extends from requires a direct connection. The 025 patent does disclose an earphone that goes into the ear, or an earphone that extends from the ear, extends into the ear and extends from the body. And that's in figures 1D and 1E of the patent. And again, if you construe extends from to require a direct extension from, then it's clear that Bose has failed to show that claims are invalid. Again, relied on Davis's body, Davis's enclosure 12 as the body, and the ear hook as the hanger bar, and the earphone 46 as the earbud 46 as the earphone in the claim, but the earbud 46 in Davis does not extend directly from the enclosure 12. So with that, if there's any other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Rader.
Thank you, Your Honors. Michael Rader on behalf of the Appellee and Cross Appellant Bose Corporation. I'd like to start by just addressing the motion to dismiss and making sure we're clear on on what's going on in this appeal. I know it was previewed a little bit in the first argument, but we have two patents here, the 025 patent and the 934 patent. The allegations in the second amended complaint that Koss made after the Section 101 order were only as to the signal strength claims, the ones listed in the footnote that Mr. Needham mentioned. So as to all of the other claims, and therefore all of the claims that Koss is appealing on, they did not reassert any of those claims in their second amended complaint. Instead, they moved forward with a second amended complaint that only asserted the signal strength claims.
And with respect to the signal strength claims, there was no appeal taken.
And there was no appeal taken with respect to the signal strength claims. So that's the reason why their substantive appeals should be dismissed as moot. And as to our cross appeal, which relates to the signal strength claims, it should also be dismissed as moot because the same thing transpired. The only difference is that they made additional factual allegations in the second amended complaint related to the signal strength claims. But what they did not do is they did not do any of the following. They did not wait for the judge to rule on the motion to dismiss that second amended complaint. They did not seek vacatur of the judge's earlier order. And after the final judgment entered,
maybe
they did
I wasn't
not appeal.
Following. For some reason, I thought, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm trying to keep all of these straight. But I want to address kind of or follow up on what was maybe my hypothetical or whatever that I posed to the opposing counsel. I thought that there was some request for like a vacature in part, but am I misremembering the request that was made?
No, that's correct.
Okay.
So what we're asking for is for all of the appeals, including our cross appeal, to be dismissed. The portion of the board's order that relates to the signal strength claims on which we lost mm-hmm. should be vacated.
Can I ask you as a practical matter, why are you asking for that if hypothetically we were to agree that there was a final judgment holding those patents ineligible and your appeal was dismissed? Why do you need a vacatur of the decision below when the patent is ineligible?
Well, I guess, Your Honor, I could say belt and suspenders. It's really just that it's the right thing to do in this circumstance.
But does it have any effect? Are there other, because it seems like there's lots of patent families going on here. Are there other patents or patent families where the board's reasoning in those claims that upheld may be used going forward, and that's why you want to vacate it? Or you just want it because you want the ruling that it was, not invalid, vacated, even though it practically doesn't matter because they're ineligible.
So,
because if it's the former, I get it. If it's the latter, I don't see what the point is, because if they're ineligible, they're ineligible. Whether or not the board found them not invalid is beside the point.
I guess what I would say is to directly answer your question about other cases, I don't know the answer to that because I haven't studied patents that are inserted against Bose closely enough to know. But I would add one thing, which is that maybe it depends on how Your Honors, how this court, words its opinion or its order. But there's a hypothetical
question. Let me just say, to be clear, maybe this will help you answer. Let's just assume we're going to find the district court's ineligibility finding binding and preclusive as to all of the patent claims and patents it addressed in that issue because it was either not reasserted or it wasn't appealed. I'm not saying that's what we're doing, but for purposes of answering this, that's the whole thing. And so if that's the case, then why does it matter that we need to vacate the board's findings on validity?
If that's the case, then I don't think we need it, Your Honor. I think other than the belt and suspenders answer, I think the reason for our concern was simply, depending on how this court worded its order, when we go back to the District of Massachusetts and file a motion to dismiss the pending infringement litigation, we were worried about any residual risk that POS might try to relitigate the issue of collateral estoppel there if this court's order wasn't sufficiently clear to make clear to the judge there. But if this court finds that Section 101 order...
Is that district court case currently stayed?
It's stayed.
Okay, and so that's a district court case involving these same patents, including some that were found ineligible, but it's currently stayed pending the outcome of the IPRs, and no communication with the district court in your case, has occurred as a result of the district court's determination in the Plantronics case? Is that what I understand?
The district court, so the three patents that are at issue in our case against Bose are the three patents that are on appeal today, the 155 patent from this morning's first hearing and the two patents at issue in this hearing. It's just those three patents. The district court has ordered us to provide periodic updates on the status of the IPRs and the appeal. And I believe, if memory serves, I believe Cost did make a request to lift the stay. And to directly answer your question, although I'm not 100% sure, I do have a memory that we may have mentioned to the district court the Section 101 order as one of the reasons why the stay should continue. And the district court did continue the stay, pending, among other things, the outcome of this appeal, these appeals. I want to make sure I don't lose sight of your question, Judge Cunningham.
I feel like you've answered enough where I know where you stand.
Okay. I'll just say, you know, with respect to the signal strength claims, the only way that the treatment of the signal strength claims could be any different in terms of the motion to dismiss, right, is if some exception applied to the general rule that interlocutory orders merge with the final judgment. That's the general rule. The exception, according to the matter of York case, which is one of the Ninth Circuit cases we cited, is only if there's if that order is overcome by later developments in litigation. So the question for your honors would be, does simply filing an amended complaint with some additional allegations and then abandoning it and stipulating to dismissal with prejudice constitute a later event that overcomes the earlier order in the litigation? And we respectfully submit it's definitely not. As my colleague said this morning, had the court issued an order ultimately on the motion to dismiss that second amended complaint, that would supersede. But simply filing an amended complaint and then agreeing to dismissal, that doesn't. If it did, every litigant would do that. As soon as they got hit with a dismissal, they would just replead and then dismiss their case with prejudice and make that argument. So all of the appeals should be dismissed for that reason. I'm happy to, I understand you aren't hearing argument, or there was an indication this morning that you didn't need argument on Cross's appeals for all the reasons we've discussed, but I'm happy to address either that or our Cross appeal if it would be helpful. Would you like to hear from me on the Cross appeal?
Do you have any questions?
I don't have any questions.
Thank you, Your Honors.
He didn't really address the merits. I'll give you a little bit of time, but don't spend a lot of time on the merits since he didn't address them.
I was... On the merits, on the signal strength claims, the board found in our favor for three factual reasons. The first two are kind of related, but the third one stands alone, and the third one was that Bose had failed to show a motivation combined with a rational underpinning, and that was based on factual findings by the board that deserves substantial evidence deference, and the record shows that the board got it right, or at least that its weighing of the facts was reasonable, and they're entitled to the deference.
Okay.
Going back to the motion to dismiss, if I may,
yes.
My colleague asked, was the order overcome when we filed the amended complaint? And our answer is yes. His order, Judge Tiger's order, was that it was without prejudice. He granted us leave to file an amended complaint. When we did that, it overcame his prior order. Judge Tiger has, in my research, issued 9 opinions on Section 101 motions to dismiss. 2 of them he granted with prejudice. He didn't allow the party to reamend the other 7, cost case being 1. He gave the party motions without prejudice, given a chance to amend the complaint. So district court judges can grant these motions with prejudice, which would be more appealable at that time. Once we filed the amended complaint, it was interlocutory. We couldn't have appealed, and there was nothing to merge into the final judgment that would have been appealable once the final judgment was entered into.
Thank you. Cases, so you didn't talk about the merits of your cross appeal, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. The case is submitted.